Available now from Graphic Audio.
I used to be a symbol of peace. Now they run away in fear. I've failed my mission.
The pieces are in place.
Protocol, tower watch, receive.
The game is set.
This is what the Titans meant. They're going to die.
Why would Superman risk everything?
Lois was the only one of us who still believed in you.
To save someone he loves.
But you took her!
It will be undone!
Alliances have formed.
Your Earth has been splintered into a multiverse. The Earths will become weaker, and if they aren't brought back together soon, everything will be destroyed.
Now, the endgame can begin.
We've all made mistakes, Superman. But it's not too late to learn from them.
DC Comics.
Infinite Crisis, Part 2.
It can't end this way!
Available now.
www.graphicaudio.net. By Greg Cox. Based on the DC Comics miniseries. Infinite Crisis and all related titles, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2007 DC Comics.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously on Doomsday Warrior.
Berger, blow the charge.
The Mindbreaker will allow us to extract all the information we need from our prisoner. Yurov, begin the extraction.
I must prove to Premier Vasily that I can lead this country on my own. We will create an army of American slaves and run the rebels down like dogs.
We have tested out this guy. If we had more of these laser weapons, we would have the power to topple the Red Government tomorrow.
Run!
Give me one reason I shouldn't shoot you right now.
I can give you information. I know things that could prove useful.
Come with me.
Please, don't shoot.
We won't. We could use your help in running the Russian army out of America.
Russians? Come with me.
Take it out!
Schecter was right. With these weapons, the Reds don't stand a chance.
Doomsday Warrior. Red America. It was a storm like no other. It extended for nearly 200 miles in every direction, roared across eastern Colorado, smashing away at the Rocky Mountains with an almost malevolent fury. It was one of the biggest of the post-war blows, with winds up to 150 miles per hour and tornado funnels setting down, leaving profound scars across swaths of land, inhaling whole trees and screaming mountain animals as they touched down for seconds, minutes, one after another, and then disappearing back up into the writhing clouds, leaving nothing living in its wake. But the storm took as much life as it gave back with its torrents of rain. Rain that would make the Earth live again. Rain that would heal the radioactive scars and sores that oozed pus, red and brown, in wastelands across America. Beneath this onslaught of wind and rain, and fusillades of lightning singeing the very air with their electric heat, beneath the atomic roar of thunder shaking the mountains around them, six American free fighters slipped and slid along a steep mountain trail 2,500 feet high. They were going into battle with the Russians, and the outcome could well change the course of human history. Ted Roxon, his eyes, one aquamarine blue, the other violet, seemed to almost glow with power. The backpack and weapons on his back pulled backwards, trying to pluck him from the 10-inch wide path. Roxon looked down for a moment, but could see only an impenetrable cloudy blackness as the storm swirled and whipped around him, snapping the loose sleeves of his jacket. He made it around the outcropping and came to a momentary plateau about 50 feet in diameter. Rock stood back and waited while the rest of his team worked around the edge. Detroit Green, Roxon's right-hand man, came next, his short, bull-like body pressing close against the lichen-covered rock. His black face shone like polished ebony as a crack of lightning blasted into a peak about 1,000 feet away. Trickles of rain splattered down his cheeks.
Damn, this ain't a good night.
Your grenade's okay.
Yeah, McCaughlin's coming right behind me.
The huge Scotsman was the size of a barn door, but tough as a grizzly in a fight, of which he had had many. Next came Chen, the martial arts instructor of Century City, in his black ninja suit that covered him from head to toe in a warm but supple midnight black material. He came easily around the outcrop, face smiling with that ever-present self-mocking grin that sat beneath his pencil-thin mustache. Next came Lang, the kid, the youngest of the group, but as tough as they came. Nearly 6.5 feet tall, Lang reminded Rock of himself when he was in his early 20s, arrogant, smart-assed, and tough as nails. The kid even resembled Rock physically. Same stone-muscled physique, same chiseled features, as if the skin had been worn away by winds and forces beyond imagination, to a pure state of impenetrable muscle. He didn't, however, share Rock's white streak of hair running down the center of his scalp, nor the different colored eyes. Bringing up the rear came Archer, who despite his 7-foot stature and 320 pounds, moved with the agility of a cat. His crossbow hung down across his back as the mountain man reached around the corner of the cliff and found a hold with his immense hand. Rock breathed a sigh of relief as the last free fighter came onto the outcropping. For his own life, he never worried, but for his men.
Shit! We need to find shelter!
No! The Reds won't wait. We should get there in a few hours.
The men glanced nervously ahead, down the side of the mountain, where the trail seemed to meander wildly from cliff to cliff. But they all knew Ted Roxon, and trusted him with their lives. They would have walked into the fires of hell itself with this man, with Ted Roxon. Perhaps that's just where they were going. The ground grew blacker as they headed down the steep slope, a sign of a nearby bomb blast in the war of a century ago. Rock looked around at the black, unproductive, sterile land as they came to the outer edge of a crater nearly 1,000 yards wide. He felt a charge of hatred bolt up and down his spine. Hatred for the Reds, the murderers who had done this to America. 80% of the U.S. population had died within the first 2 weeks of the strike, dying either of the bomb blast or of the far more painful and terrifying radiation damage, which made hair fall out like burnt wheat and teeth fall like rotten black fruit from the bleeding gums of the wounded. The Reds were easily able to fly in their troops and take over the U.S. from citizens in no shape to fight back. For nearly a century, the Slavic invaders had occupied America, living off the produce, keeping her surviving population in the chains of slave labor. They thought they had won, but now, 100 years in the future, everything was about to change. The 100 free cities had only recently organized into the Confederation of United States, and plans were underway for a reconstitutional convention at which delegates would be sent from every hidden city to elect a president and Congress and prepare plans for an all-out military assault on the Reds. Just months before, Rock and his men had returned to Century City from their expedition to find the technicians and learn the secrets of their particle guns. After returning with hybrids loaded with them, Dr. Schechter, Century City's head scientist, made a careful, controlled scientific testing of the range and power of the particle beam rifles. Each gun had an unknown energy source with the kinetic energy of a 1 kiloton nuclear explosion. At last, Schechter had permitted Rock to take two of the weapons to attack a large Russian convoy that ferried supplies from the major Midwest airport of Fort Dobrynin to Denver, some 200 miles away by truck.
Whoa! Shit!
Everybody okay?
I'm fine. A little muddy, but otherwise untouched.
Good to hear. Let's go!
Ugh, this mud is disgusting!
McCaughlin, this is nothing compared to your cooking. I'd eat something look like this mud compared to that swirled tallow from last night.
Whatever. Yuck. I thought God was on our side.
Well, there have been many gods in history. It depends on which one you mean.
Chen's kung fu shoes floated on top of the mud as easily as the other's boots dug in.
Obviously, their rain and their thunder gods don't like us. One of us must have offended one of them in a past life.
Eh, fuck 'em. We got the guns, right?
I weep for your kin.
At last, they came to a deep valley which fell off below the peak they stood on, nearly 3,000 feet down to a long, winding road.
This is it, men. Why don't you all rest up? Make what cover you can among these boulders using your ponchos. McCaughlin, how about some coffee?
One steaming hot pot coming right up.
Won't the flame be visible?
Not with this tube stove. It's another one of Schechter's inventions. Flameless and smokeless heat, ignited by a chemical in the bottom of the tube.
All you gotta do is bend it, like this, and instant heat.
Right. While that's setting up, let's make ourselves a shelter.
The free fighters quickly set up a temporary camp as they waited for the red convoy to pass below them. Within 5 minutes, they had erected a camouflaged mountain tent and anchored it with 12-inch pegs into the hard surface of the mountain's rocky soil. The moment it was together, they all ran inside to dry off, and then took out their weapons and inspected them for the impending battle.